With winter fast approaching, the cost of natural gas and ways to heat a home are becoming a big burden to bear for many European households. The European natural gas import price is up 15% and 233% during 1 year ago. So why the sudden surge in prices? And more importantly, why does natural gas cost so much more in Europe than it does in the United States? I'm Christy I, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we'll be taking a closer look at natural gas and breaking down the supply chain that is so crucial to our global economy. So why exactly is natural gas so much more expensive in Europe than basically everywhere else? Well, surprisingly, the natural gas market is not as global as you might think. The European benchmark, known as Dutch TTF, is priced in euros per megawatt hour, making it hard to see just how much more expensive it is. In the US, natural gas is priced by Henry Hub in millions of thermal units. Now, after converting it to get apples-to-apples comparisons, Europeans actually pay a staggering nine-fold higher cost for natural gas than Americans. So what caused this huge increase? Well, part of that actually stems from supply and demand. The EU and the UK's liquefied natural gas imports set an all-time historical record high in April of 2022, averaging 16.5 billion cubic feet per day. Europe had an unusually cold winter last year, and then Russia started curtailing supplies through the pipeline. And then on top of that, you have the Green Agenda's push to reduce coal consumption, thereby lowering greenhouse gas emissions, pushing for even higher demand for natural gas to replace it. Now let's bring in Juan Ricardo Ortega, president of Bogota Energy Group, who is at this very moment in Germany, one of the places where natural gas is making headlines. So first of all, is it wise for Europe to continue to push this green agenda so heavily when it is hurting so many citizens during the transition phase, as natural gas supplies are unable to plug up the shortfalls of other fossil fuel energy sources?
You can clearly tell that they are bringing more flexibility into the energy transition process. Now, they are already considering imports of coal. They are looking for sources of liquefied gas. Unfortunately, the level of the crisis is so large. You're talking about one third of the world's supply of LNG that would need to be channeled towards Europe, particularly Germany, that there is literally not that much room for maneuvering. You're talking about some of the largest economies in the world and some of the large consumers of energy. So the pain, unfortunately, it's unavoidable, and it's not just coming from the energy transition. It's just the fact that they lost their main source of natural gas, that this whole mess is out of control.
And do you think, will Germany and the EU eventually be forced to break away from the Washington agenda and refocus its business and economic ties with Russia, given that the EU is so reliant on Russian gas?
I doubt it. The level of frustration and disappointment on what has been going on is pushing another agendas with significant resources and economic groups behind it. No, the development of other sources of energy, hydrogen in its many forms, methanol, ammonia, they are going to be looking for new alternatives, and they are pushing the electrification of the economy as one of their main goals. How that burden and that pain might be shared between the budgets of the governments and the citizens, I think, is going to be the main discussion. Regarding shifting their policy, I see that as very unlikely. And what you're going to see is a significant strain in the coming years in the international gas markets, where the weakest economies and the weakest countries are going to be the losers. But the energy is going to remain an agenda where the rich, powerful countries are going to continue finding a new source where they are going to be getting what they need at a much higher price. And I think everybody is getting used to assuming the cost of energy is going to increase significantly in the medium to long term until new alternatives are brought to market.
And now, how high do you think natural gas prices will go in Europe by the end of the year?
Oh, definitely gas prices are going to be much higher. The $3, $5, $6 per million of BTUs, that's history. You're going to be prices that could be anywhere around $30 to $40. It's going to be much higher. And probably it's going to facilitate and help the transition for new energy sources. And I think that many people are betting on that. And this is what is going to make it economically feasible for companies to invest in all the infrastructure they need that would be mostly produced in the same European country. So I don't think they mind that so much if they manage to keep the price for the public in an acceptable level. And so the level of subsidies is going to be the main challenge and how the governments are going to fund those deficits.
Yes, and what is the situation with Russia? They have reduced natural gas supplies to Europe as a means to put pressure on them, but at the same time, it hurts Russia's profitability as well to cut down on its exports. So where is this stalemate going and when does it end?
This is going to continue until you find a resolution to the Ukrainian situation. And I see that it's going to be a lot of pain everywhere, not just between Russia and Europe or the US, but the countries that require natural gas in the international market, they are all going to be suffering because the scarcity is going to affect everybody. You can see that in the market of urea and the same in foodstuffs. You know, most countries are experiencing inflation in foodstuffs up to 20-28%. So this is going to continue until there is a solution for the Ukrainian conflict.
And will Russia be able to long-term pivot to its Asian partners for natural gas exports to shore up its markets and profits? And how long would that take?
Most likely, yeah, China is going to have a significant advantage because they probably would be one of the buyers and the recipients of that gas, and maybe India. A lot of it will have to be defined by how the winters behave. Now, if you have a mild winter in Asia and a mild winter in Europe, this is going to be digestible. If you have horrible winters in Asia and Europe, this is going to be a nightmare. So it is hard to tell. It will be played out within the next months, depending how nature chooses to bring this coming winter.
With this push to a green economy, how long do you think human society will be using natural gas for? And how long will be this transition? Or do you think the push to a green economy will eventually fizzle out?
Natural gas is going to be a mainstay during the whole transition. No country can just get rid of gas right away, and it will be a significant source of energy for the coming decades. But there is going to be growing consumption of energy as electricity, and some parallel markets are going to develop. It could be hydrogen that has significant challenges in the transport, but it could be ammonia if the new technologies for cracking it become cheaper and more efficient. It could be methanol, and some of them for sure are going to become significant players in transport, mostly shipping, freight, trucks, trains, and airplanes. And those markets are going to shift most likely to these new sources of energy. And industry, you can clearly see in Germany now, companies looking at the production of steel based on hydrogen. And that's going to happen because of what these crises have brought to Europe, more likely quicker than later. So you can expect significant changes within the next 5 to 7 years.
Thank you so much, Juan Ricardo Ortega, for joining us today. Now, compared to Europe, the U.S. has plenty of natural gas resources to tap into. It is a net exporter of natural gas and exports quite a bit to Europe. But now, there is a limit to how much U.S. production can help its European allies. This quantity is limited because of the high transportation process to ship natural gas overseas. Now, in order to ship it, natural gas has to be liquefied. And this is a very complex and expensive process, and the facilities that transform gas into liquid is a costly endeavor, and it's a relatively new thing born out of the recent shale boom. That means most stateside producers are maxing out the available liquefaction capacity, and most of our natural gas will be trapped in the U.S., unavailable for export. So to break it down, estimated liquefaction fees range from 2.25 to 3.5 per billion thermal units, which is a 15% markup. Then you have shipping, where costs vary by destination and market conditions. This can range anywhere between a 15% markup to a 40% markup in prices before it reaches the destination where there are also duties and taxes levied. So what is the cost of natural gas for countries that are blessed with vast reserves of the fuel? We'll discuss more after the break.
By the middle of the 19th century, practically the whole of India had been under the rule of the British Empire. The colonial authorities had imposed a heavy tax, bringing the people into poverty and were exporting natural resources. And moreover, these authorities absolutely had no consideration for the traditions of the local population, treating them like second-class citizens. The British were showing signs of disrespect even to those who cooperated with them. The fact of ignoring the religious beliefs of the Hindus led to the mutiny of the sepoys, mercenary soldiers serving under the British Crown. The rebellion began on the 10th of May, 1857, in the garrison town of Meru, north of India, in the form of a mutiny. The rebels quickly took over Delhi. The heroic resistance of the Indian people lasted for 1.5 years. However, the forces were not equal. The colonial authorities dealt with the rebels cruelly. The enslaved sepoys were tied to the mouth of the cannon and were shot right through their bodies for the amusement of the public. This type of execution was called the Devil's Wind. The obliteration of the mutiny resulted in the death of 800,000 inhabitants of India. However, the British Empire never broke the free spirit of the Indians and their will for resistance.
Welcome back. We are talking today about the cost of natural gas. So let's look at India, where the share of natural gas consumption has increased to 6.7% as it aims to have 15% gas in its energy mix by 2030. Currently, coal is the primary fuel source used for power generation, oil is used for the transport and industry, and biomass for residential heating and cooking. But as India has faced its worst power crisis in over 6 years earlier in 2022, India is facing mounting pressure to become energy independent. Now let's dive a bit deeper with energy economist Vibhuti Garg. At this point, How is India balancing its two priorities, becoming energy independent versus cutting back on carbon emissions?
Right. So just to set the context, you know, the Indian economy expanded at the rate of 8.7% in financial year 2021-22. And we are expected to demonstrate strong growth in the coming years. And this revival of economic activities is further leading to a surge in energy consumption and energy demand, which is expected to kind of grow at the rate of 5 to 6% every year. The recent incidences like COVID-19 pandemic, as well as the Russia-Ukraine war, have led many countries, including India, naturally to turn inwards and rely on what is available in the domestic market. So to address the issue of energy security and also protect against the price volatility of imported fuels, the strategy is basically to exploit more domestic resources to meet energy demand. So yes, even India is looking at that very seriously. But while India is trying to increase domestic coal production by opening more mines for private production, but in order to meet the substantial increase in demand, India also has big plans for renewable energy deployment. So the updated NDC, which is a nationally determined contribution, which India has now kind of enhanced and is committing to reducing emission intensity by 45% by 2030 compared to 2005 levels, and also to achieve 50% of installed capacity from non-fossil fuel sources. So that's quite ambitious, but at the same time, it's quite achievable given the kind of demands growth that India is likely to witness. There's a lot of push not only to develop renewables energy, but also development across the value chain. I think that's where India is further kind of trying to reduce reliance on imports. So the government has initiated or introduced schemes like production linked incentive to increase domestic manufacturing and also reduce import dependence on products for renewable energy deployment. Further, India announced, you know, energy conservation bill, which kind of empowers the Indian government to lay down different consumption thresholds for various non-fossil fuels, and also kind of allowing carbon trading, which will boost renewable energy deployment. So just to sum it, several measures are being undertaken to push clean energy alternatives, not only as solutions to decarbonize electricity sector, but also clean mobility and other sectors like steel, cement, refining, etc.
And how does it make sense for India to transition to natural gas and LNG when it is so much more expensive than coal? And wouldn't high gas subsidies just burden the economy?
Yes, India's attraction for natural gas was kind of burning bright again. The government a few months back reiterated its target of raising natural gas share in the energy mix to 15%, you know, while the current share is about 6%. And this share has been just raised from 6% in 2016 to about 6.3% today. So this is despite, you know, India has gone ahead and expanded its gas grid and city gas distribution network. Prices have skyrocketed globally for natural gas. And, you know, India has been importing 50% of its domestic requirement from imports. So the gas price surge since October 2021 has worsened India's situation. The benchmark that India used, which is the Japan-Korea market, the JKM, you know, has gone up and more than doubled between April 2021 and 2022. And further, even the domestic gas prices have kind of more than doubled as far as, sorry, the LNG prices are concerned, it has more than tripled. So I think that's where it is hitting the use of gas quite substantially. So government is further, in fact, on October 1st, likely to announce another price revision, you know, where prices are expected to rise further by 1.5 times. And yes, if gas prices goes up, it becomes difficult for the Indian government because it means higher subsidies. And given that the government cannot pass on these high costs to consumer for certain products, the subsidy burden has increased. For example, in the case of fertilizer, the subsidy, which has been hovering around rupees 1 trillion almost, which is equivalent to US dollars 14 billion for 2 years, is likely to go up to 2 trillion Indian rupees, which is $28 billion for this fiscal year due to the high gas and urea prices. The government had stopped LPG subsidies in the last few months, but is now planning to reintroduce them because of high prices. And also for some sectors like city gas distribution, the government has mandated that only domestic gas be used. So as such, the push for gas use does not bode well for the Indian economy with the current prices that we are witnessing.
Now, the Minister of Petroleum and Natural Gas, Hardeep Puri, had recently said that fuel price rise in India had been contained in comparison to the developed countries. And he cited that the Indian government has taken several measures to minimize the volatility of global crude and gas prices so that Indian gasoline prices were down 2% during July and August, while the rest of the developed nations saw gas prices jump to 40%. Now, what exactly are those measures that they've put into place?
India imports 80% of its oil, so while the cost of petrol and diesel have risen, the oil marketing companies in India did not increase the cost of petrol and diesel for the final consumer, and they have been bearing some of the losses on their books. So one option for the government was to increase, to let the OMCs increase the pass on the entire cost to the end consumer, which would have led to much higher inflation, which the government did not allow. But there is some portion of losses that is sitting on the OMC's book, and the losses have kind of gone up substantially in the last few months with the rise in prices. So what Indian government has done further to help, tied up with some of this high price rise has to cut down some of the taxes which the government was levying on both petrol and diesel. And that's how they have tried to maintain the prices in a certain range to maintain its affordability, which meant revenue loss for the government. And some loss has been borne by the OMCs. But now with the prices going down, OMCs are being able to recover some of those losses because the prices have not been reduced while the oil prices, the global oil prices have gone down. So that's how it's one of the ways that the government has ensured that the prices are in the more affordable range. Certain states also reduce the state tax, which is the VAT, the value added tax in India on both petrol and diesel. So that was one aspect. And the other was India started scouting for cheaper options. So it started buying more oil from Russian crude. Primarily, the objective that the government said was only based on commercial reasons and to contain inflation. So these are some of the measures that the Indian government took.
And the government has taken many steps towards a green alternative future, but do you see natural gas as more of a supplemental fuel or a true replacement?
As I said, India does not have much of its domestic gas and has been importing 50% of its gas requirement. So softening of gas prices are not in sight. Global futures indicate that the prices will remain upward. So LNG prices are expected to remain above $25 per MMBTU for the rest of the year. And even the forecast is that it won't go down below $10 per MMBTU till 2027. So the gas contribution, what the government needs to do has to be user specific till new technologies can scale up. For instance, gas-based power plants, which are required because India is adding more and more share of renewable energy to the grid, they can be used as flexible generation resources. Still, other flexible generation resources like large-scale battery storage becomes viable. Further, government must incentivize efforts, for faster adoption of nascent technology such as green hydrogen, for sectors like fertilizers and also like biogas for the transport sector. So what at IFA, we recommend that any transitional use of gas should be limited to sectors with no competitive alternatives or where gas use support renewable energy uptake or helps in maintaining grid stability, as I mentioned earlier, or else government should kind of reduce its reliance on using gas as a transitory fuel.
Vibhuti Garg, thank you so much for coming on today. It's easy to spot the winners here on the natural gas playing field. US, Russia, countries blessed with vast quantities of precious natural resources to power the nation. And one can argue that while Europe is paying for the higher cost of natural gas in the interim, it is winning in the long-term goal towards sustainability and becoming carbon neutral. But is that really the case? Perhaps the greatest hypocrisy in Europe decoupling from Russian gas relates to the environment. The carbon footprint of American LNG shipped to France is twice that of conventional Russian gas. So we are witnessing a vicious circle. Sanctions against Russia has increased international demand for fossil fuel. Renewables account for less than one-third of all electricity generated. But at the same time, governments are reluctant to fund major extraction projects because of their climate commitments. So the biggest winner here is actually going to be big oil. But rather than reinvesting profits into new production to help displace Russian oil and gas, execs are rewarding shareholders. This sets us up for an even tighter energy market in the years ahead. And I'm thinking we go over 300 euros per megawatt hour on the Dutch TTF gas futures by year end as we keep up this current pace of things. Thank you for watching. We'll see you next time right here on The Cost of Everything.